Hi, welcome. This is Dr. John DeMartini. This is one of the most amazing and inspiring shows that you can listen into. If you want to be on the edge of your seats, if you want to open up your heart, if you want to expand your mind, and you want to meet incredible people, stay tuned because you're just about to experience a transformative radio show that will change your life. And you're listening to the Dr. Pat Show is coming up right next.
Welcome to the Dr. Pat Show. Talk radio to thrive by. Powerful, inspiring, and coming to you live, bringing you stories of people like you and me, busting through and living life full out. Get ready to dare to wonder what your life would be like if you knew you could not fail. Hey, everybody, welcome, welcome. I have to tell you, Jotham Stein is joining me here today. Now, here's what I want to say. I think about the people that I get to speak with and how honored I am for that. Then I think about how wonderful it is that they've decided to get out on the edge and talk about things that people are just not willing to talk about. And I want to tell you what I mean. Because today, you're going to be introduced to somebody that's not just written a book. You know, you could write a book. But what you're doing is you're telling people, if you take these actions, if there are things you can change, this is all the things Negotiate Like a CEO is going to help you get ahead from lessons that other top entrepreneurs and executives have learned. So if you even took that class like I did and sat there for hours in front of Peter Drucker, he would not have told you what's in this book. So today I am so thrilled to introduce you to someone that decided to really take his own personal experience, the experience of others, and come out of the gate for us and help us understand success in the new world. Jotham, thank you so much for joining me here today. It's great to have you.
Dr. Pat, it's great to be on your show.
I'm not kidding when I said to you earlier that this, I felt like you were writing this book for me because there are so many things in the book that I felt are, you just don't learn them until you learn them by experience. How important was that for you to drive that point home?
Incredibly important. That's, in fact, why I wrote the book. You know, they don't teach this stuff coming out of college. They don't teach it in business school. They don't teach it in law school. And I have the experience in employment to see what things work out, what things you have to look out for, how to protect yourself, which is the theme for the book. And I wanted to help people. So that's why I wrote the book, because after 25 years, I have all the experience. So I've learned it along the way. And I've seen quite a few different situations. And so that was the whole point.
Yeah.
Was to help people when they just don't know or they don't talk about it. You're so right in the beginning. That's how I started my practice, in fact. I realized people might be having a problem in employment or they might want to protect themselves in employment, but they didn't know who to talk to. They wouldn't talk to their family. They wouldn't talk to colleagues. They wouldn't talk to friends. That's helped me start the practice with an advertisement I talk about in the book. I was stunned at who would call in, and now that's why I wrote the book, to help people. Mm.
Look, I've been asking a question for 20 years. I just shared a little bit about my journey in this arena as, you know, what I now understand it's a thing, Jotham. Let me just tell you, I do this because I'm on a mission, and 20 years ago I was on a mission. I've been fired from every job I've ever had, and for very good reasons. One, my last executive job, I stood up as the head of HR in a Fortune 50 company, the formerly known AT&T, and I refused to implement a downsizing program that targeted senior employees months away from full pension. Now, you and I both know that probably if I'd have read your book, I'd have probably got some other tips instead of just making a big scene in front of everybody about that. But I don't regret any moment because it led me on a different path. I want to ask you this question. I would love to know what you personally, what did you have to overcome? What challenges, what obstacles, what did you really have to look in the face of the fire and move beyond it to bring you to this very moment?
Well, it has to be when I started out my own practice after I left the big firm just after 2 years. I went traveling, then I came back and I did some other work, and then I hung out my own shingle. And as you know, Pat, you've been in business and worked for businesses. The worst part about it is not having enough capital when you start out. And so, you know, after 6 months or so, I was like, well, I'm not sure this is going to make it. I've been very fortunate now, 25 years later, or more than 25 years later, have the experience, and my practice is going gangbusters. I get lots of referrals, and I'm able to write this book, and I wrote a previous book for lawyers, a how-to book to guide lawyers to represent entrepreneurs, executives, employees, you know, at any stage in their company. But in the beginning, business-wise, you know, it always is, if you don't have enough capital, if you don't have cash flow, you can't keep your business going. I'll never forget that, thinking about that 6 months into it.
Yeah, and you know, so right. You know, thank you for answering that. Look, I love being able to speak with you to give people what I call insider information on this, because we look at our environment and we have to look ourselves in the face. I love how you start the book, right? I love how you come out of the gate and help us understand. You have to know the arena you're playing in, right? I love that you use that term. You could have used a million terms, but I got such a visual of that.
It's true, and people's arenas are different because they're playing in different parts of the country. They're playing in different kind of companies. They're playing in different with their own different experiences that they have with different individuals. You know, companies are just a set of individuals, right, who are making decisions. And then there's a company structure over it. So you really have to know that. You have to know whenever you're going to negotiate anything, you know, you have to think what's your bottom line, what are your goals, and then what are the goals of the other side who you're negotiating against, and try to figure out all the things you don't know, which is the point of the book. It helps everyone think about that and then start and helps them understand what they don't know, whether it's dynamics that happen, reading tea leaves, good and bad, or the documents that you have to sign to get an employment job, whether it's an offer letter or an employment agreement, change of control agreement, equity, stock option agreements, and so forth. So I try to cover the gamut of possibilities. And, you know, had I written the book back then, and had you read the book when you stood up in that organization at AT&T and spoke, if you had had a protective prenuptial agreement, that is, essentially an offer letter or a separation agreement that protects the employee, would have protected you on the downside if things go wrong. And listen, you were lucky. It sent you in a great direction that you got fired. But imagine if you had gotten fired and you were able to walk away with a nice separation package, you know, some protection for your AT&T equity if you had it, that stock, or you had been guaranteed when you stood up there that if they fired you, which sounds like it was perhaps an illegal firing, but I don't know, it was so many years ago, who knows what the law was then, but you would have gotten, let's say, a payment for your COBRA premium payments or separation pay that would have been guaranteed.
Yeah.
So in some...
The good news is this, because I stood up publicly, and you know this about the politics and organization, because I stood up publicly and created support groups, they put me in the full severance package because there was too much to lose by having me go down the path of unethical, unkind at that point. So you're right. I was lucky. I was very lucky. But you're right about this. We don't know what we don't know. I want to ask you this question along the same lines. I spent, after that job, I went back to school, got a master's degree, then I continued on. And what I studied was what was happening in the world at the time. And it was called by Robert Reich, the repeal of the psychological contract of work. And I went on to study psychological contracts for 10 years. And what I found is that the end game and the impact from not knowing what you have in this book caused people to be devastated. 1,200 pages of interview notes. of people that I could pinpoint to some of the things you have in this book that would have made their lives easier. Because we don't have a psychological contract of work anymore, do we?
No, and you can, you know, most states are at-will employment, so companies can hire and fire at will almost everywhere. And the whole point, that's what the book is doing. By giving information to everybody, it's trying to help them avoid the pain of something that goes wrong, getting fired, getting forced out, getting squeezed out. Now, we all hope things in employment go well, and we all hope we'll be at our job forever. But the practical side of it is that it doesn't always happen that way. And the pain that it causes, remember, employment jobs are so much part of our lives. They take up careers. They take up so much part of our lives, our family lives. And when something goes wrong, it can be really devastating to the person who's suffering, who's being fired, sometimes for no reason, or is being forced out, sometimes for no reason. And I'm sure what you learned is those people that were better at reading the tea leaves, and my book, Negotiate Like a CEO, tries to explain all what the tea leaves are. Those people that could recognize the tea leaves would sometimes avoid the emotional devastation by moving to another job, for example, or by taking some corrective action, for example, before, you know, they got dumped on, fired, forced out, whatever it is.
Mm. You know, you make a really good point in the book, and I want to piggyback off what you just said. And I had to read the line twice to make sure I read it right. And this is a misunderstanding. Entrepreneurs and executives are not the same thing. They can be, but not necessarily. And then you go on to say the skill sets are very different. And boy, did I have to learn that coming from being an executive. Can you talk more about this? Because I think this is a pivotal point for people that are executives and now I'm going to be an entrepreneur. And they think I'm just going to like do whatever I was doing.
That sometimes works for those that are lucky, those that are skilled, those that have the both skill sets. But sometimes it turns out to be a big failure. So executives are typically those who can run companies. They have management skills. They have people skills. They work at building organizations, whether it's a small organization at a startup that's a company that doesn't have any revenue and then becomes a much larger company, or whether you're talking about your Fortune 50 company that you were at. Those people are managers, and they have their skill sets are managing organizations and people. Entrepreneurs, on the other hand, their skill set is creating, which is different than managing. They create, and they also take risks. So, and sometimes they take risk in ways that executives and other people don't want to take. Remember and they have to have a focus that others don't take, and a belief in themselves and their product and what they're doing. And it's a completely different kind of skill set. So there are entrepreneurs out there who are great at starting companies. And those that recognize it recognize, well, I'm not good at running the company after I started it. So they're serial entrepreneurs. They start maybe 5, 10, 15 companies. They do incredibly well because they're geniuses at creation. They're geniuses at taking risk. They're geniuses at being able to put together an organization, raise money, while at the same time keeping the lights on. I can't tell you how many entrepreneurs have had to worry that those lights were going to go off. Mm. And then they hand it off to an executive who manages. Your classic MBA, but it doesn't have to be an MBA. It could be from the School of Hard Knocks and be a great people manager and who build the company. Similarly, there are some people who are entrepreneurs that are great at bringing the company to revenue, some number, I don't know, pick $5 million. But they know they can't bring it to the next level because they really need a professional manager, somebody who's trained with people in bigger organizations and systems. So they would hire somebody else or something like that. But on the other side, the executive who's used to an organization, used to managing people, might not have that same drive, might not have that same vision, might not want to run around, frankly. And as an entrepreneur, you do everything. I think we were talking before, Dr. Pat, before we got on the show, that you started from the beginning in your radio network, so you can press the buttons and get things moving, really, from you can do everything in your business, from beginning. The beginning, most entry-level task, all the way up to interviewing and being the face of the organization. Well, a lot of executives can't do that. They don't have that experience. And that, as an entrepreneur, is what you need to do. So what you were talking about earlier when you started your radio network is what entrepreneurs do all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And they start companies. It doesn't matter whether it's a radio company or a chip manufacturing company or a internet game company or software company, whatever they're starting. And executives aren't necessarily cut out to do that. They may be, but they're not necessarily.
And, you know, I love that we're talking about this because it really leads me to something. There's a theme I found throughout the book, and I would love for you to talk about it. You know, I want to hear from you the top things that people can do, because this is a short time that we have together. I want to make sure we get it. But I would love to know what's on your, you know, top hit three. But there's a theme that I noticed that while you're sharing that, and I don't know if I'm on track or not, but it is a theme that came up in my research, and the papers I wrote on this won awards as if it was never studied before. But I got to tell you, it is so like common sense stuff. And that is this. It's not always the end result. For example, it's not always the fact that you just fired me, let's say, or you just moved me to a different location. It's how you did it that really is causing the damage. Now, I found that throughout the book in different ways, but I want to hear from you. What's your top three? What would you say is the top three we should be aware of so that in the negotiation, we understand how we take things personally, what's business, what's not, and what we can do?
So the top thing you can do is assess your situation and your leverage. And if you have any leverage at all going into your employment relationship, negotiate like a CEO. What does that mean? It means protect yourself on day one, if at all possible, with what I call in the book a professional prenuptial agreement, which is nothing more in most cases than a severance agreement negotiated on day one. That's what CEOs do. That's what the CEO of AT&T, your company, did.
Yeah.
before he or she joined, they negotiated their severance agreement on day one, protection. And the point is that especially in this day and age with companies want to do hiring, people have a lot more leverage than they think. And they may not be able to negotiate in a full entire package like a C-suite executive, but they might be able to negotiate protection that could make it much easier for them. And so, for example, let's make believe you're getting stock options.
Yeah.
And you negotiate a one sentence in your one-page offer letter, and it says, if you terminate my employment for any reason, you will accelerate the vesting of my stock options by 1 year, period. That mm-hmm. means that if that person gets fired, things don't go well. And we all often hope they will go well. That employee is going to walk away with a year's worth of accelerated vesting. And assuming that equity or stock options were important, one of the reasons why that employee went to the company, that could really help them. And I'd also say another theme from the book that's really important to note, if things don't go well, know you're not alone. This happens all the time, that people that are the shrewdest, that the most capable, that they're nicest people wind up being on the short end of a employment situation. As whoever was executing with you at AT&T after you got fired and did the RIF, the reduction in force, there's sometimes that things just don't go well. But it's happened many times to many of your friends, family members, people you don't know, because nobody likes to talk about that. But my point is, you're not alone. And over and over again, people are able to get another job and reincarnate themselves, whether it's at another job in the same field or at a different field. And if you're protected, that I discussed before, if you're protected, then that journey to the next job, to the next employment, to the next career is made much easier with that severance package that you hopefully negotiated on day one, or whatever's important to you. You got a sentence in your offer letter to protect you.
Yeah. I want to talk about something that may seem obvious, but it's not obvious. And it certainly wasn't obvious to me at the time. And I have to say that outcome for me turned out better than I could imagine. And I don't know, back then, you know, we had to stay with the company for 3 months and literally train the people, and I started support groups, and it was different then. Now we're in a different world. But I want to ask you this question as we sit in this different world. Many people don't think they need lawyers. And I got to tell you, I just went through two things. One of them, shocking. And it was the strangest and oddest thing you can imagine. You know, when you have a client that may challenge the work you've done, you just don't know what action they will take. And some people are just, you know, you think you're operating from a stability, from an integrity point of view, but people are under enormous pressure and they don't always act that way. And if you don't have somebody in a legal team to talk to, we don't do that. Like even me, when I was going through that scenario, I didn't think, oh, should I get a lawyer? Because the company threatens you sometimes and says, well, if you get, right? People just don't think, maybe I should seek advice, right?
You know what? You should replay this for all of your listeners out there, what you just said, because I can't tell you how right you are. And listen, sometimes going to a lawyer, you don't think about it. You don't want to go to a lawyer because, you know, you think it might go down a rabbit hole. Frankly, they're expensive. You don't have the experience. But a good lawyer that's not just good on the law, but good on business and knows how to read people and understand a fact pattern and can help talk you through it could be the cheapest and best thing that you or anyone can do to help themselves, to protect themselves, and to make things a lot easier on themselves. And don't feel too bad that even you didn't have a lawyer. I can't tell you how many shrewd, very successful people I have, clients I have, that become clients because something went wrong and they never expected it and they had no idea. And I am the first lawyer they call in their career. And these are people as successful as you, Dr. Pat, but in different careers, different areas. And it happens over and over again, which is it's a fascinating dynamic because we all go into relationships. I mean, you're a psychologist. We hope things are going to go well. We expect things are going to go well. We, I don't know what you call it in psychology, devalue or don't value or don't give to the risk that we're taking, right?
Yep.
And what you discussed is really important, and why I said you should replay what you just said, is people act under stress in ways that you would never imagine, in immoral ways, in unkind ways. And that's just the reality of it. And I talk about it in the book. You know, I have those 59 fictional stories that are totally fictional, but they're like repeat genres that occur. Like, you know, like if you think about a movie, some are adventure movies,
yep.
Some are romantic comedies and so forth. And one of those stories is something I've seen multiple times in my career. Now, I've been doing it for 25 years. This does not happen every day or every year. But the wrongdoer in those characters that I write about, the wrongdoer was the person who stood up at the wedding, who was a college roommate. And pressure became, and money, that usually when money or something's involved, and it caused that person to have, in the story, look themselves in the mirror. The character has an epiphany and decides they're better to run the company than the guy who started it, who was the college roommate whose wedding this character had stood up for. And that's happened multiple times. And sad to say, again, it doesn't happen even every year, but it's sad to say it happens to men and to women. It happens. And it's the money being involved, the stress being involved. It's the worry about the family. You know, your family, how are you going to live and feed your own family? So, and I want to say, that's the downside that I'm protecting yourself against. There are tons of people out there who are as honest as they as long. And there are tons of people out there who, if they shake hands with you, they will, or metaphorically shake hands, I don't know how you do it on Zoom, but they will honor what they said. They will honor the oral contract.
Yeah.
But it doesn't always happen that way.
It doesn't always happen. I want to take a minute. I would love for people to know two things. How do they find out more about you, and how do they get a copy of this book? Because this is the kind of book, for those of you out there, you're thinking, well, I'm not quite. No, it's the book you give to your friend who is too afraid to read the book. I'm just saying. But it is something in here, and wait till you hear the question that I ask next, and you'll understand for a minute why this is a book for anybody that wants to be independent or executive. How do people get the book? How do they find out about you?
So to get the book, you can go to Amazon and type in Negotiate Like a CEO, and it'll come up in either paperback version or Kindle version. You can also just Google Negotiate Like a CEO, and mm-hmm. it'll take you to some bookseller. I'm not sure whether it's Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or someone else. And to learn more about me, you can go to the website, negotiatelikeaceo.net. So that's .net, negotiatelikeaceo.net. And there'll be a description about the book. There'll be a description about me. There'll be a way to contact me. And there'll be some of these, a couple of fictional stories up there. So if you you can learn everything and decide for yourself if you want to buy the book. If you do, you can press there's a button on the website, and it will take you, I think, to Amazon to buy the book.
Oh, I love it. Boy, I only have 5 minutes, but I got to get to this. There's a part of the book that my mentor said to me in a different way, but it means the same thing. You can't teach people what they need to learn for themselves. Now, my mentor said, you can't take a person to a place you haven't gone. Okay, here we are. I'm going to piggyback off what you said. In the world we're living in, we're also dealing with customers and clients. And even if you are a CEO or an entrepreneur, I think what you just said applies. There was a scenario that happened not too long ago to someone I know that did not have an attorney, and it had to do with the vulnerability of a chargeback going through a system, and all you need is somebody to say, they didn't provide it to me. And when you wake up the next morning, your bank account is missing $25,000 and you don't know why. And then you go fill out the ridiculous forms and you use landscape instead of portrait, and your entire argument is thrown out. And then you don't realize, I should have gotten an attorney. I should have written a letter. Oh, and maybe now there's even an option to sue for that money, even though the chargeback didn't go through. And this is a loyal customer that loved you the day before. You see what I'm saying?
Yes, that's why having a good attorney that gives business and legal advice is a good thing. And that's why you have to look out. You have to hope everything goes well, but you have to look out for your downside. It's like having insurance. So having an employment and protective employment agreement in business, having the right kind of contract and having the right kind of people around you, you hope you never need them. Listen, you hope you never have to pay that lawyer. But having one there that knows what they're doing could save you so much money, but heartache. And the devastation exactly.
Yeah.
It's really because everything that sort of goes wrong causes heartache, right? Mm-hmm. Or sometimes personal devastation.
Yeah.
Especially the customer who's been loyal, right? And suddenly they turn on you, and there's an emotional element to that. Somebody you've worked with, even for the most hardened salespeople in the world and the most hardened business people in the world, it's emotional when somebody turns on you and, metaphorically speaking, stabs you in the back.
Yeah. Thank goodness this was somebody that I was coaching. And because my area of expertise is in broken promises, you can only imagine what my toolkit looks like. But, you know, here's my last question for you. I know you've got to run. My company is growing. We have proprietary software. We're going from one channel to 10. We're going to launch a technology and crowdfunding in the next 90 days. And I am looking for a legal team. I cannot afford to not have that kind of support. What would you say to people that have conjured up a lot of reasons not to reach out for a legal team?
If they have a situation like yours or anything close, I won't sugarcoat it. I'd say you'd be crazy not to have a legal team there to help you. You have so many issues. So many things can go right. And listen, we hope they all go right. But I can tell you along the way, things might not go right, or you might need some lawyer to fix something to make sure that you have a trajectory that makes sure you go through the roof, or in the current lingo, have a unicorn, right? So anybody that's anywhere close to your situation, building a business, any entrepreneur should have a good lawyer that not only gives legal advice, but business advice to help protect you, because you, Dr. Pat, as you move your company from one to, I think you said, 10
channels.
Networks or 10, 10 channels. Okay. You don't know what you don't know.
I don't.
And it's not because Because you're not trained as a lawyer. You're not trained to watch out. You're not trained for risk, right? You're not trained for who can stab Dr. Pat in the back. Mm. And you hope nobody will, but there's somebody out there who might decide that's their business model.
Mm-hmm.
And so you want to protect yourself from all the things you don't know. So there's a dislocation of information. The other person out there who might be taking advantage of you. And I can imagine in business, in IP, in investing, in lending, you're lucky you're your own CEO now, but if you're taking an investment, you have no idea what's in those contracts. You have no idea how investors, whether they're private equity investors or whether they're venture capital investors or strategic investors.
Yeah.
A strategic investor is just another like business like yours, like a radio, if you had a radio investor or a media investor. You don't know what their plans might be. You don't know what their lingo is when they talk amongst each other. You don't know typically because you're not trained what's in those documents. One sentence in a document can really hurt you.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's true of whether you're building going to 10 radio channels or whether you're trying to grow your home small business from your family.
Yep.
Or whether you're at a startup and you're trying to grow your startup to a much larger level. It's all the same.
Mm.
The issue, what I say is all the same, is risk is the same, the lack of knowledge of what the other person knows. And I'll just use as an example. I have no idea. I just heard about this, that you're moving to 10 channels. But let's just say, for some reason, you were taking an outside investment.
Yes.
Okay. So if you're taking an outside investment, do you know what's driving those investors? Do you know what their goal might be? Do you know that sometimes investors already know that they're getting rid of the CEO of the company that they're investing in before they invest? Do you know what those documents say? Because those investors, I guarantee you, have gone to really good lawyers who could put really good stuff for them and not for you in this example in those documents. That's why you would need a lawyer.
Yeah.
And that's why coming back, just to use my street language, you'd be crazy. Your listeners would be crazy if they're trying to build something for themselves like you are building for yourself without having lawyers. And again, part of what they're protecting against isn't just financial loss. It's the devastation you were writing about. And we were talking about earlier, it's the emotional devastation. Remember, we've spent so much time building our businesses, so much time in employment, in our career. When you lose something like that, it's almost like losing a metaphorical baby, right? And so, metaphorically speaking, it's your baby. A company is what could be like people consider it their baby. And so, the way you protect, if you protect yourself against that, and you protect yourself and you stay in control, or you get yourself a good separation agreement, depending on what you're doing. Or as an entrepreneur, you set yourself up so you can't be set on the outside and fired from your own company. And I can't tell you how many entrepreneurs have been fired from their own company. You've not only protected sort of your family and your wealth, but you've protected your well-being. You've protected your mindset. You've protected your emotional reservoir of good things. And that's the whole point about the book. Protect yourself.
I love that you did this. I hope you will come back. Again, please tell people how to get the book. And also, people can connect with you on your website, negotiatelikeaceo.com, .net. And they can also go to negotiatelikeaceobook, I believe, .com. Is that correct?
Yes, negotiatelikeaceobook.com or negotiatelikeaceo.net. So if you put the book in there, you go to .com, and if you don't put the book in there, you put .net in
there.
Well, and so that's how you get to the book.
Well, I'm going to be filling out the form on your webpage, because I am truly not going to make the same mistakes again, because the definition of insanity is just doing those same things over and over and over again and expecting different results. And you cannot do that when you're talking about business. Thank you so much for everything you're doing.
Thank you so much, Dr. Pat, for having me on your show.
You bet. Let's take a short break, everybody. We'll be right back. We'll be right back.
expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and do not necessarily reflect the views of the station, its management, or advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.